I'm on an aircraft somewhere between London and Bergen in Norway, and I'm sat next to Ragnar Hansen. Give me your name, how it's meant to be said now.
Ragnar Hansen.
Okay, that sounds much more Norwegian.
It is, definitely.
Now, we just so happened to sit next to each other, and within a very small space of time, we find out that we were both in Kurdistan, Iraq, at the same time, and we've both worked in Sudan, and we've both worked in Pakistan, and we've both worked in various areas in Africa. What is it you do?
Well, I'm an engineer by trade, and I have been a country director for an NGO. I've been doing engineering works. I've built a lot of schools all over the place. But at heart, I'm a photographer.
I can see from your brand shiny new laptop that still has the plastic on the top. Your massive amount of work, which for me is a little bit of a shock. None of it really exists online, and you have witch doctors. You have dancing from all around the world. You have some incredible wrestling from the mountains in Sudan, and all of these in themselves are amazing photo documentaries. Why haven't you shared them yet?
I'm actually, to tell you the truth, I would have loved to, but my generation, we haven't really got into these social networks yet. Well, at least I haven't. But I'm now pensioned, and I will definitely try one of them. If it's Twitter or just Twit, I don't know.
Well, don't worry. The biggest thing is worrying about making mistakes. That's what holds so many people back. My kind of online world turned around when I put my hand up and said, I've just made a terrible mistake. And the whole community came to my aid. So for me, I found very quickly the benefits of being very open about the fact we're all on a journey here. I mean, the mistakes you must have made traveling the countless countries you must have been to, they're not, you don't look back and look at them as mistakes now. They've probably turned into adventures.
Absolutely. And I am from the generation of film and slides and heavy equipment and Nikons weighing half a ton, but I do have a collection of about 50,000 slides before the digital camera was invented, in fact. And now I was thinking, as a pensioner, I will have a lot of time, and it's like going through many parts of your life before. But I have been to seen many interesting places, and I think I would also love to share that. For me, pictures give pleasure, and especially if they're from places where you don't often go to or come to. Maybe I call it exotic, but that maybe is not the right word. But I've always done it through when I've been working. So, that's the advantage. I'm not like a hit-and-run cowboy, comes in and does, a couple of shots and off you go. No, I've been there on the long run, I've been there, Iraq, I was 6 years, Pakistan a year, and Sudan 1 year, Uganda, Angola, Mozambique. In Mozambique, I was 5 years. So, because I'm doing this in an environment where people also get to know me, I get access to things that maybe just passing through would not do the same for them,
I can see that straight away from your work. These people trust you. These people possibly in some ways know you. But when you're looking at a family of shaman, for example, who have little to zero technology anywhere around them, a knife may be the only technology they have.
Sure.
And you've been invited into the home, and they're more than happy. And these are cultures that are normally terrified of having their image taken, for you to take their image. Is it the advent of the digital camera that has maybe made stuff like this possible? Because you can immediately show them the result.
I think that is part of it, actually, because I will never go and say, look, I promised you to send you a copy of this. I can't, because most people who I take photographs of don't have an internet connection, or it's difficult to get a poster. So I never promised. But now I find that people are happy just to see themselves on a picture. And it gives me great pleasure when they laugh at themselves. Mm. You know, they get happy. It's great, you know. And well, that's part of it.
How, of all these places that you've been to, how moved have you been? Because you're living in these places. It's very difficult, unless you are a very passionate photographer, to keep seeing things with new eyes. How do you maintain this passion? And what has moved you more than anything else?
And you're absolutely right, because you get blinded after a while, and things that you found interesting to start with, you know. So I know that. But still, you know, I am very open in the beginning also. And that's where I sort of see things, and then maybe I can see the development later on. Because it's a learning process as well. It's, you know, I know that I'm going to get blinded to these things, you know. A dust storm after three, you don't care about it anymore, you know. But it gives enormous images, you know, it's exciting. And I can feel it's funny, you know, it gives me a high to tell you. When things like that, you say, you know, people are there, there's something happening, and you lose yourself. I lose myself completely in the photo taking. And people, I think also people don't see me anymore. After, you know, it takes some time doing, but they don't see me anymore, you know. And that's when you can take some very good photographs.
So you found yourself in some really unusual situations just from the short time we've been talking. You've had dinner with Idi Amin. You've found yourself in areas which have come under huge genocidal conflict. Does the camera sometimes become a filter between you and what is going on? Does the camera help you to as much be a part of the scene by this interaction, showing the back of the camera, etc., but also to distance yourself when you need to? One minute, wait for him to finish. Those of you that understand Norwegian will know that we're probably coming into land soon. And that'll give you a bit of time to think about this question as well. He says it in English now, but in this really, really bad speaker, he makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, go on.
You know, I want to shut up.
Oh, this is the English now.
I thought that was the Norwegian.
I can feel very slightly that we are descending, so we're probably no longer at 30 odd thousand feet. No ears popping yet. Let's see if we can
come back to your question. You know, most of my work has been with NGOs, so my work has been directly involved with the situation in that country, so you can't escape that thing. But it's true that through the photographs you don't see the reality as it is, the true reality. You see a part of it, and that part is that filter, because there are so many good things also. And you can pick the good things, right?
Yeah.
And that is not the news. That's not what people are used to seeing. They're seeing the news, which is also disasters, also war. It's also that is fine. You know, that is part of it. But there are in all of this, there are good things too. And I try, you know, somehow through that photography, to document, you know, a bit of that.
I found when I was in Jordan recording stories that it wasn't until I started recording the audio of the people. Oh, we're going to have another announcement, I think.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now approaching Beidingen. So we are going to prepare the cabin for the landing. So we will now call through the cabin to select some ways for the rest of the
night. Seatbelt on. For me, multimedia became key in a way, because it was the capturing of people's stories in their own voices as they tell me that suddenly gave me an emotion and a porthole to something that my photograph wasn't totally capturing. To the extent now, when I look back at these, I guess, multimedia slideshows, I can't watch them without getting really, really quite emotional. So, I don't know, have you dabbled at all in multimedia?
Yes, I have. I actually, in the beginning of the 90s, I was made a multimedia show of the Norwegian Voluntary Service, and we actually went around in Africa to visit volunteers, seeing what they were doing. But I tried to angle it from the recipient's side, not from the volunteer side, what they thought, you know. And it was made, in that time they had, you know, we had the old carousels and we had these tape recorders, and it was, yeah, it was great. It was very, very good. In fact, I liked it, because to watch it, you had to be in the dark, like in the cinema. So you had to focus more than you do on, for example, on the television or on Twitter, I don't know.
Yeah, there's could be some more focus, definitely. I was at a conference recently, and it was quite refreshing that the first time ever there was no internet connection in the room where I was talking, and I was suddenly hit by this massive amount of attention. And we are in some ways forgetting to focus as we multitask, and we need to remember when there is a time to down devices and just give the direct attention, like I guess we have had in this conversation. I want to say thank you very much, and as soon as you email me with some kind of online presence when it becomes born, I will add it to this audio so people know where to go to see your huge body of really quite amazing and fascinating work. Thank you very much for making this flight go fast.
Oh, thank you very much. I believe in destiny, you know, so maybe I'll be on Twitter or somewhere, and some people can share my things, and I hope it will bring something, maybe.
It always brings something, yeah. Guaranteed. Thank you.
Okay.